So this is our very last PowerPoint from Israel. And they're all still online if anybody wants to go back and review them. And if one of them's messed up, you can always get the PowerPoint from me, if you're interested. All right. So this was the 11th and final tour day. It wasn't the final day, but it was the final tour day. Our itinerary was to visit the Temple Mount, get a VIP tour of the Temple Institute, visit the Western Wall, which is the Wailing Wall, venture down into the Western Wall tunnels, and lastly, journey into Warren's Shaft at the Gihon Spring and go down through Hezekiah's water tunnel to the Pool of Siloam. So it was a pretty exciting day. We arrived extra early at the Temple Mount to the security line. We were the second tour group to arrive that morning, for which we were very grateful for later. When we left the tour of the Temple Mount, there was a huge line, probably about an hour wait at least. And it gets a lot bigger than that many days. But this is the southern end of the Temple Mount. The teaching steps, which I pointed out last time, are on the far side of the wall in the distance. The Dome of the Al-Aqsa, however you say it, the mosque there stands above the southern wall. And by the way, I'm going to move right along because I have an extra long PowerPoint, so I'm going to not wait too long on these pictures. The Temple Mount is only open to non-Muslims on Sundays, except for certain Jewish holy days. This is close to the corner, close to the corner here, jutting out from the west wall, are the remains of Wilson's Arch. There's the remains of Wilson's Arch in the western wall, circled there. It was named after the British soldier, Wilson, that rediscovered it in the late 1800s. This was one of the main entrances to the temple during the time of Christ. It is the beginning of the footbridge that arched over the Lower Jerusalem street below and led down from the temple into Lower Jerusalem. So it came out and then curved to the right, and there were steps down to the right, but there was an arch before it curved. At the time of Christ, there was a large gated entrance into the temple at that point. The remains of the arch are where the street level, so I made what looks like a gate or doorway there, about where the street level would be. So the remains of the arch are where the street level began. This was how far down into the wall the Romans tore the Temple Mount down. The large stones to the lower right are original Herodian. This part of the wall was probably repaired by the Umayyad Caliph about AD 692 when the Dome of the Rock was built. This western wall entrance is the only one allowed to be used by non-Muslims. Underneath the ramp by the wall, one can see the women's side of the Jews' outdoor synagogue up by the wall. Like everything that Islam touches, it is a very, quote-unquote, fair system at the Temple Mount. If you are non-Muslim, you must go through a tight security checkpoint for weapons or explosives, but Muslims may come and go freely without ever being checked. Very fair system. This picture shows both sides of the outdoor synagogue, and it gives a good contrast between Herodian stones and Caliphate's repairs. The big stones are all original Herod stones, and the little stones on top were put there later by the Muslim Caliphate, or Caliph. Here we are inside the Temple Mount compound, and again, fairness is applied here too for non-Muslims. No praying for non-Muslims, no praying, no entry into mosques, and absolutely no irreverent behavior, whatever they think is irreverent behavior. But for Muslims, have a picnic on the grounds, sure. Play soccer, pray, do whatever you want, including protesting against the Jews and wearing shoes inside the mosques if you are protesting. They break their own rules when they're protesting. As always, we were given a very thorough historical account of different corners of the compound by our guide. He's the one with that Aussie hat there and the beard kind of in the center left, along with all the religious rules that we needed to know while we were there. And by the way, ladies, do not show up at the Temple Mount wearing pants. You probably won't hear from our church, but just in case you do, don't do that. you will be asked to put something else on, one of their little wraparound skirts. So at least that's nice. You won't find any immodestly dressed ladies there. But anyway, the few remains, ancient remains that were left, still gave a glimpse of how impressive the Second Temple must have been. So very ornate things that Herod had built there. Here are a bunch of ancient pillar bases and their capitals, which I talked about. Capitals are the tops of the pillars. And so there would be a big tall pillar between the bottom and the top there, but the pillar is missing. This is the interior side of the Western Wall. There are Muslim homes and shops all along here. Very interesting. I didn't realize that this was so thick that it was able to be homes and shops. And this is looking toward the temple location. Here's a couple of different views of what we were seeing, just panning around as we walked. That's the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And this is right beside that, this little courtyard here. It's the Southern Wall area. And I hadn't thought about it before, but this view right here could very well have been what some of the courtyard looked like when the temple was here. I don't know if it was all bricks all the way across, you know, rocks, or if they had some trees growing. They could have put some trees in here. Many of the pavement stones, not tons and tons, but many of them are originals that Christ would have walked on. Not sure about these gutters, but notice that they did plan on water drainage. They cut a gutter here in these stones all the way to the far side, so the water would drain off. And this is the north entrance, the inside entrance to the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is, of course, Muslims only. Didn't used to be that way. And turning from that point, you can see the Dome of the Rock. The doors of these two main mosques were built in line with each other on a north-south axis. Interesting. And between the two is this washing fountain. Muslims have similar washing traditions as the Jews do before entering their mosques. So you sit in those benches and wash your hands and your feet. Maybe a little bit of your head too, I'm not sure. But at least your hands and your feet. The temple platform has two different levels today. So we were on the first level, and of course the temple was on a higher level. I don't know if that's the way it was back when the temple was there, but that's the way it is now. The Dome of the Rock sits on the traditional site of the Holy of Holies. Kind of planned that way, I think, so that the Muslims would stop the Jews from rebuilding a temple. Again, it was built about AD 692 and later expanded about 200 years later. I'm not sure which part was expanded. It might have been the dome area was original and then the octagon was later, but I'm not sure about that. But the 24-karat gold of the dome was donated in the 1990s by the King of Jordan, so that's fairly new. The prettiness of this building is nothing compared to the beauty of the Second Temple after Herod had expanded it. It would have been far more magnificent than this. But just the platform Herod constructed was massively impressive. This is looking northeast toward the Mount of Olives. And then this is looking back toward the west. The width of the platform east-west is, of course, the shortest distance of the platform, and yet it is still huge. This is looking north. And here's a view of the Mount of Olives from the Temple Mount. And this is from the east, looking to the northwest, where the Antonia Fortress once stood. And then from the east, looking toward the southwest. And again, this is just the higher platform. I'm not sure. A lot of these stones may have been, but the caliph built a lot of this later. So I'm not sure if these are the Herod level or not. Some of them are, and I'm not sure if the lower level was actually a lower level during Herod's time, or if maybe those stones just got removed. That would be a good question to research there. But some of these, I believe this is at least the Herod level, because in just a second, we'll get to a picture that shows the top of the mount. This is on the north side of the mosque, looking directly west. And so there's that little gazebo structure on the far right. This little structure here on the far, far right. This gazebo was built to enshrine the original rock surface of Mount Moriah. Okay, so this is the tall point of the mountain. And that's the rock, supposedly the original Mount Moriah top. A well-known rabbi, whose name I now have forgotten, but our guide was mentioning it, he wrote a book or pamphlet explaining why this location is actually the real site of the Holy of Holies. Very convenient, probably. It would allow the Jews to rebuild their temple without removing the Dome of the Rock, if they went by that theory. Also of interest, the Muslims provide their own police force for the Temple Mount. This is the picture of the police office, the whatever you call it. But that Muslim police force made one feel so very safe and secure while we were there. We had entered the interior platform from the south end, and we exited the platform in the northwest corner. This area was a good example of how to tell original stones from later additions. The oldest stones are more worn, and so the ones that I'm centering on are original Herod stones. The steps and to the side are not original. So there's been a lot of repairs done to the Temple Mount. Not everything is original. These in the center could have been walked on by the Lord, of course. The stairs that we walked down from the high point of the Temple Mount had brought us back down to the main exterior platform level. And again, I'm not sure if we were now at a lower level than it was at the time of Christ. It very well could be. But back along the western wall, we're looking toward the north now, toward the Antonia Fortress area. I believe that building is a college today. There are still ancient gates in the western wall leading out to the city. There's one called the Gate of the Cotton Merchants there, and one called the Gate of Ablution. We exited by the Gate of Ablution. And this right here is a good example of a street in the old city of Jerusalem. It was much like the street we had walked yesterday when we went to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, leading from the Damascus Gate. Very much like this one, very narrow. This is a main street in old city Jerusalem. And as you walk down these streets, they become covered paths with buildings built over top. And then as you keep going, they'll reopen to the sky. And then you walk further and it gets covered again with another building. So very, very interesting. Jerusalem is like an archaeologist's dreamland. The further you dig down in Jerusalem, the more history you will find. This was right beside the street we were walking down. And they had dug a lot, very far down, like 30 feet or so. This map tried to explain, which I didn't very well understand the map either, so I'm not going to try to explain it to you. But it tried to explain the different historical strata we were looking at. Starting near the surface was Byzantine, then digging down, the further you go, you get to Roman, then furthermore, the further you go, you get down to Hebrew, ancient Hebrew remains. And so, very interesting in Jerusalem. Very frequently, as you walk down the street, you would find these doghouse-sized squares of blocks in the middle of the street, and they would be covered with plexiglass, and you get to them, and you look down them, and it's a hole in the street. And you could see what was beneath your feet under the street level. And this was straight down one of those holes. So they do a lot of excavating under the street in the city of Jerusalem. Scientists could dig nearly forever, probably, under Jerusalem, finding historical items. Another one we looked down. And the street we were on led us to the remains of the Cardo Maximus of Aelia Capitolina, which, again, the Cardo Maximus is the main north-south boulevard of the Roman city, Aelia Capitolina, that Trajan built on top of Jerusalem in AD 132 after he ordered his legions to plow it over with oxen. In fact, I don't know if it's AD 132 or it might have been AD 122. I have to double-check that again. My memory might be wrong on that. But It was his attempt to blot out the memory of Jerusalem and Israel when he did this, when he plowed over Jerusalem. But Aelia Capitolina and Trajan and the old Roman Empire are gone, while Israel and Jerusalem still stand in silent testament to the fulfilled prophecies of Jehovah God. Genesis 12:3, "And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed." And so Trajan was cursed by God, and he is no longer on the scene, but Israel still remains. Here's a portrayal of the Cardo in Roman times. There's one figure that doesn't belong here. It might be hard to see him from where you're at, but there's this little boy right here on the far right with a baseball cap and a backpack and sneakers. Probably he didn't belong there. But this is the oldest existing map of Jerusalem. It was a floor mosaic from an ancient Byzantine church. It is called the Madaba map, if I'm pronouncing that right, the Madaba map. And here's a map showing the interpretation of it. The Madaba map lies facing the east. East is on top, west is down, north is to the left, and so forth. And so there's the name, if you can read all these things, this says the holy city of Jerusalem up here. This says the lot of Benjamin. And this is the east Cardo. And this is the west Cardo. And then this, they made the churches big. So this is a church, the Maria Nea Church. This is the Hagia Sion Church. And this represents Ephrata, or Bethlehem. So this was a map of Jerusalem and its environs. This represents Nicopolis, or Emmaus. And let's see. This is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in the center, and so forth. So it was based on religious ideology more than actual physical accuracy. But that's the oldest existing map of Jerusalem. This portion of the Cardo was open to the sky and rain, but it was very interesting still. The far end of the same street there, so that they might have had shops in those little alcoves there. But this was the Roman city road of AD 132. And then we kept moving on in Jerusalem. It's quite common in the Jewish communities to see very, very small children making their way to school alone. This was like a six-year-old girl, maybe seven at the most, all alone, just walking down the street to school. And you see that a lot in the Jewish communities. Outside the largest synagogue in Jerusalem stands Israel's golden menorah. I'm not sure how solid gold this is, but it is made out of $3 million worth of gold. It's ready to be placed in the third temple for the Antichrist to use. How exciting is that? This is the covered excavation of Hezekiah's broad wall. They uncovered 65 meters of it to make it visible as they excavated it. But this is what he built on the southern side and western side and northern side of the city to expand the city when Assyria invaded. It was hastily constructed when the Assyrians invaded the land north of Jerusalem in Judea. The blue lines on that far corner of the building, these blue lines right here on this building represent their guesstimated height of how high the wall stood originally. It was right after seeing this that we had our tour of the Temple Institute and saw a nice presentation of the history of the temple and also all of the newly created pieces for the third temple, except for the golden menorah. They had a recreation of that golden menorah there. They had a mock-up of the ark. They don't have the real ark there because they believe, not the real ark, but they didn't make a new ark because they believe the old ark will be found. Either that or they aren't telling us that they already have it. I don't know which. But I have no pictures of that because it was another area where taking pictures was not allowed. So I apologize for that. But if you want to see some pictures of the Temple Institute, go to Way of Life's PowerPoints and For some reason, he was allowed to take a bunch of pictures many years ago. So the next thing we did was have a tour of the Temple Institute. And after that, we had left the Temple Mount in the northwest, walked to the extreme western edge, where Hezekiah's broad wall was, of ancient Jerusalem, and have now looped back to the southwestern corner of the Temple Mount. So that was our route in Jerusalem that day. We are back in the vicinity we had began in. The Western Wall Outdoor Synagogue is directly ahead. Here's a couple pictures of the women's side of that synagogue that my wife took when she went down in there. I don't see any shelves full of Hebrew Torahs in this area. That's what strikes me about this side. I see some women holding books, which are probably Torahs or Talmuds, but I don't see any shelves full of books because that's what was over in the men's section. The men's side was chock full of study material. The street level today is a little higher than it used to be. These arches were not originally built at head level, so I'm not sure how much higher the street is today, maybe 20 feet, as much as 20 feet. This is the Jewish Ark, containing the Hebrew Scriptures there at this synagogue. So the Torah would be stored there. And this synagogue, of course, on the western wall had impressive architecture. So these arches that we're looking at would be similar to what Wilson's Arch would have looked like in Jesus' day from underneath, that arch on the other far end of the western wall. And there may have been several copies of the entire Torah and Talmud. There's so many books there, but there probably were multiple copies for people to use. And there was a real scroll you could spin and read if you could read Hebrew. But that was kind of neat. Here's a video. You notice that Jew in the corner was shaking or wobbling back and forth. When the Jews pray or read the Torah, they believe they're supposed to do that with every bone of their body, and so that's why the Jews nod back and forth or do some kind of movement the whole time they're praying. Is they believe that every bone of their body should be involved in worshiping Jehovah. Interesting, but it looks a little silly today. Anyway, this is the outdoor part of the men's side. That wall is a good and tall wall. I would not want to have to breach that while somebody defended it. I wouldn't want to have to breach it with just a sword and shield. That would be very, very impressive. The next thing on the tour was our visit to the foundation area of this wall. And the building on the far left is the entrance to the tunnels. So we went into that left building and then down into the bowels of Jerusalem. And there are many passages down there that we did not go down. It's quite like a maze underneath the streets near the temple. Probably in most of Jerusalem, but at least near the temple it was. There's at least one full synagogue located in these tunnels. The bench area on top of where we were going, these benches up here, was the women's section of this underground synagogue. And the foundation stones were huge, for about 40 feet long and estimated to weigh at least 40 tons each. Imagine trying to move those things. And I think this picture here shows, I tried to show how long one of these things are. So I stood in this picture at the far end of one where the stone ended. And that's how he's putting his hand at the other end of the stone. So that's a 40-foot long stone there. Big stones. These stones used to have plaster on them. Again, this would have been about street level of Jerusalem. So these stones that have that cut edge, that little, I forget what it's called. There's a fancy word for it. I put it in my original PowerPoint, but now I've forgotten what the word is. But that little edge facilitates plastering. The plaster is able to stick to the stone better at the edges of the stone. The lower blocks from this point, about from this point, the lower blocks under our feet don't have cut edges because they were not the original stones that you would see from the street level. And so anything under the original street didn't have that cut edge and weren't plastered. We are standing on the old city street level from the time of Christ. Very interesting. And from that street level, we were able to look down in some spots right next to us, down an excavated shaft beside the temple wall. The actual foundation of the temple was still quite a ways down there, at least 20 feet down still. So this temple wall was huge, huge when they built it. And every block was cut and placed half an inch inside the last one. This makes the whole structure virtually earthquake-proof. And that's why it's still standing today. Otherwise, it would have fallen down because of the seismic activity in the region. And why aren't I going forward? Here's a video of where we were at. I'm sorry. That turned sideways. It didn't turn sideways on me before. That's really neat.
At the base of the Western Wall.
I apologize for that. It didn't turn sideways on me until just now. But anyway, every several yards, they had excavated a larger area like this one, and then it went back down to that narrow tunnel for a long ways. Eventually, we broke into this rare area. This was the real street next to the real wall at the time of Christ. And so what you're seeing would have been the real buildings that Jesus would have seen. Those windows there. I'm looking on the left side. I'm looking straight up a corner. There's windows on the two walls, and then I'm looking at the ceiling. This is one of the few places left in Jerusalem that truly did exist at the time of Christ. There's not a whole lot of places that you can see there that you can say that about. And these are the real pavement stones of the actual street Christ could have walked on. Very interesting. But how did they move these massive, massive stone blocks with hand tools? Here's a video. I hope it's not too loud.
Thank you.
So that's a general idea of how they did that. Notice those holes in the rocks that they carved in order to hammer a piece of wood tightly into that spot in order to lift the block. That's why there's, I'll go back to a picture of the blocks. That's why there's these holes in the blocks. They would hammer a piece of wood very tightly in there and then lift it by that piece of wood. So it's very interesting. After leaving the Western Wall area, we walked south down into the city of David. I don't remember if we walked or if we, I think we got bused a little bit that way. But anyway, right above the Milo area is where we were dropped off, where David's palace was. And in that area is this courtyard today with a restaurant eating area. And right here, in the middle of all that, is this grate. It is the traditional site of the miry dungeon from whence Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, saved the life of Jeremiah the prophet. Jeremiah 38:6. Then took they Jeremiah and cast him into the dungeon of Malchiah the son of Hamelech, that was in the court of the prison. And they let down Jeremiah with cords, and in the dungeon there was no water but mire, so Jeremiah sunk in the mire. That grate is the opening to that traditional hole. Further into this courtyard area was this floor mosaic. These tiles were courtyard tiles in the second temple, where Christ walked. But notice the suns and the stars. Even at the time of Christ, there's evidence here of the pagan zodiac creeping into Judaism during Herod's renovation of the second temple. And before we left this area, we went onto a viewpoint area at the very top of the city of David. I'll give you three shots of the Mount of Olives panning south. And I'm sorry for the head in the picture, but it's hard not to get some of that with so many people around. And this is the southern hill. This southern hillside, this is not the Mount of Olives, this is the next hill over. But it's a Palestinian community, and it's usually very dangerous to venture into. So it's interesting how the Jews and the Palestinians, the Arabs, live together, but it's so dangerous all the time. Just this week, two Jews pulled up to a car wash in a Palestinian neighborhood. They pulled up to a car wash to it was a gas station just to get gas, and the owner shot the two Israelis to death just because they were Israelis. So it's a very dangerous place. But anyway, this is from the same location, that same viewpoint, some shots of the Temple Mount and panning west to see Suleiman the Magnificent's new wall. That new wall was built around the AD 1500s, and it was built around the upper old city. So David's city was left out of Suleiman's new wall. Okay, the old city of Jerusalem was left out. So this is panning from the corner of the Temple Mount. And what a nice palm tree I got in that picture. But the teaching steps are right behind it. And then panning more toward the west, the southern temple wall continues in the background. So this is this higher wall is the Temple Mount wall. But Suleiman's wall juts out from the Temple Mount goes south for a short ways. It turns southwest and travels southwest of the temple area. That's Suleiman's new wall. It's actually quite impressive how the Jews have built a modern city within such ancient ruins while still maintaining the ruins. The main street follows alongside the wall, and so they save space that way. And from this point, the wall goes directly west, then eventually loops back and goes north, and then loops again all the way back to the Temple Mount on the north. That's Suleiman's new wall. And so it left out the old city of David. This is back at the edge of our lunch area of the Milo, on top of the Milo. And again, the Milo was a steep man-made embankment, man-made by the Canaanites, not David, but by the Canaanites, It was the foundation of the Zion fortress that David conquered and David made his own. But the Canaanites originally did a lot of this construction. It was repaired by Solomon in Solomon's time. So what you're looking at would have been Solomon's repairs. Here's a few pictures of that Milo area as we walk down to the beginning of Hezekiah's tunnel from the Gihon Spring. There are several governmental offices were located in this location, especially at the foot of the Milo. Again, it was repaired by King Solomon, mentioned in the Bible. And I'm going to show you a picture of what we're looking at, or a model of what we're looking at right here. It was just one house or one building halfway down the Milo. So at this point, we're not at the foot of the Milo. We're just halfway down, and there was either a house or a government building sitting right here. Computer's talking to us. This picture was in the entrance building to Hezekiah's tunnel. It shows approximately the same view of Jerusalem in ancient times compared to today, about from the same viewpoint. And so you can see Solomon's temple on the top, in David's old city, and what it looks like today. It's changed quite a bit. And now we are descending down into the Gihon Spring. The opening of this tunnel was inside. The opening of the tunnel was inside some ancient walls, but the spring was outside of them. It was halfway in and then flowed outside of the walls after it came out of the ground. I'm sorry about that. Many of these pictures were taken on the move, so if they're blurry, I'm sorry, but this is hiking down toward the Gihon. Excuse me. As we got close to the spring, the tunnel opened into more of a cave. And near the spring is Warren's Shaft. It's believed to be the actual gutter that Joab scaled in order to enter the Zion fortress of the Jebusites. And this picture is looking straight down it. So I'm leaning over the railing to get this picture. That's Warren's Shaft that Joab probably crawled up. And we're not moving forward again. We move forward a lot. Too much. All right, what aren't we working on? Sorry, we're having technical difficulties back here. Our PowerPoint is not responding. I'll have to have our technical man fix it for us. Maybe it worked now. Looks like it might be responding now. Okay. Guess we just had to wait. It's working. All right. Thanks. Okay, Warren Shaft, and this video of the area.
We are in.
Unbelievable. I guess all my videos turned sideways. I'm sorry about that. This is the Gihon Spring with water in it down there. The Canaanites had built a fortress tower down here to protect their water source. And this will probably turn sideways on me, too. Yep. I'm really sorry about that. And we entered Hezekiah's famous water tunnel. Do not enter if you are claustrophobic, and do not bring anything more than a small bag. You will regret it. I did. So this here is nice and spacious as you begin. There are several feet above you in this area, but later on you have to double over to fit through the short tunnel. So if you are afraid of tight places, don't go down this. But here's some pictures. My videos are probably going to turn sideways, so this is probably the best shots we're going to get. I'm glad I added these. And here's a video. We can watch it sideways.
Back to ankle height.
What do you know?
This ain't bad at all.
Oh,
look at that.
Wasn't bad at all. We haven't reached the bad part. You can see the tunnel is coming down on us now. So we're bent over going through that area. I'm playing all of these so you get the idea of how long it takes to get through this. This tunnel is 580 yards long. By the time it was done, by the time I was halfway through, I was ready to be out of there. I guess I got one of these in the wrong order. Sorry about that. This looks really spacious from the camera, but it's not. It's about a person wide. The average width of this tunnel. If you hit one side with your shoulder, you bounce off and hit the other side with your other shoulder.
Thank you.
That was live singing, by the way. That was our group singing in there. I was too wore out to sing. Oh, another one. Anyway, you get the idea. It was really, really long. And we finally came to the end of that 580-yard long tunnel and broke out into the location of the Pool of Siloam. This is turning around from that last picture. The water has been diverted from where it used to flow. It used to flow in the trench on the right where the brother is looking down at. And the Pool of Siloam is around the corner in the open area to the right. So if we move forward, it opens up into the Pool of Siloam right here. And they've just recently confirmed that this is the site of the pool and have begun excavating it for the first time since antiquity. So they've got the steps uncovered right there going down to the pool. But they're still working on the main body of the pool. These are the stones Christ would have seen when he healed the blind man here at the pool. And they have a ways to go yet in order to fully restore it. But they're working on it. Here is an artist's rendition of what the pool may have looked like. So on the right side there, you come around the corner and the pool appears. But that hillside was right there. So that's a pretty good drawing, I think. And this was the final day of the official tour. But as it was Sunday, we met for church that evening in one of the hotel conference rooms, and Pastor Courtney Lewis from Chicago preached to us. The next day, our flight didn't take off until midnight, but there was no tour. So one of the families invited us to go with them to a tank museum, which was pretty neat. A whole bunch of tanks. We praise the Lord for a wonderful tour with a great guide, two great guides actually, and wonderful brethren to enjoy it with. It was quite sad to say goodbye to all of our new friends, but we were also completely ready to go back home. There is no place like home. We praise the Lord for the opportunity to have done all that, but we are grateful to be back. And we also want to thank Nathan and Dorina for watching our kids while we were there for 2 weeks. So that is the final day of our tour. Anybody have any questions? Yes.